Every once in a while, we get to conduct an interview where the subject evokes a lot of personal memories and associations. And in the case of this next interview, a work of fiction called Smash Your Head on the Punk Rock and published by Exile Editions. It's a story that is set mostly in early 1980s post-Quebec referendum Anglo-Montreal, which is where I, as the reader, relate to the setting and the times. And it's also a superbly well-crafted work, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome the author here on the third floor in our series Reading on the Third Floor, Matt Bissonnette. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for coming in and taking the time to do this. Your book is as much about style, to me anyway, as much as it is about plot and themes. In fact, a local author, Ray Robertson, writes about it. It's fun, frantic, and feisty. Other words can frenetic, other F words that come up.
I can think of some other F words, but whatever.
There's a couple of those in the book, too. Can you describe your style?
I got into writing, you know, sort of in the early 80s, you know, as a young person. You know, I really was impressed by, you know, Raymond Carver. And then I was also sort of came from really being interested in the beats. So in some ways, I guess what I was trying to do, you know, kind of mix sort of shorter, more concise bits like the Carver stuff with some more rambling beat type of things. So I guess, you know, not that I'm anywhere near that stuff, but if you took, you know, Kerouac or something like that and then mix that a little bit with Carver's sort of succinctness and his kind of emotional impact.
And of course, being punk rock, you get that certain kind of energy in the writing.
Yeah, you want it to be entertaining. You want it to be kind of short, sharp shock, you know.
Exactly.
And that was sort of very, very intentional when I was doing it. I wanted it to be like pop singles. And, you know, it all kind of moves along like that with sort of some feedback in the middle kind of thing.
Yeah. About a month ago or so, I was in Cuba on holiday, and I took this book down there to read it while I was on the beach, sunning myself, along with a whole bunch of other books.
Mm-hmm.
And I read about 30 or 40 pages, and I couldn't read it anymore. I had to put it away because my mind was so relaxed. You know, the ocean, the breeze, and everything. And I couldn't. It was because of the style. I was getting so charged up and wound up reading it. And I thought, you know, I can't do this right now. I'm going to have to wait till I get back into civil society.
You need a little urban squalor.
Absolutely. And then as soon as I got back to work, back here, I'd read this on the subway crammed in the corner, you know, right beside the smelly guy and the lady with all the bags, right? And I'd read this there, and I was right into it.
Yeah.
Like it was, yeah. You use these short sentences sometimes with no regard whatsoever to grammar, and I don't mean that critically. I mean that in a complimentary way, in terms of like almost like a poetry kind of way.
That's just poor education. But yeah, I brought it to the Quebec school system.
Yeah, well, tell me about it. But let me. What I love about this is every once in a while, out of nowhere, you will put together just a paragraph that is so beautiful. That's so soothing.
Oh, yeah.
Almost like you land on an island, a little oasis of, it's almost like, oh, well, the anxiety is over and now you can just relax, and you'll summarize something in a beautiful paragraph.
You know, I guess Lynch is interesting that way where you contrast. And you know, I come from filmmaking, and one thing that we always try and do in the movies is juxtapose things that are not exactly complementary. You know, a certain type of music with a certain type of image, you know, or photograph something beautiful in an ugly way or something ugly in a beautiful way. And I, you know, I think that's something that, you know, just flowed over naturally. But, you know, that it's not so much montage, but it's montage of like style a little bit. And I think it's, I enjoy it. So I just try and do it. Yeah.
It worked really well.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Let's talk about punk rock, and let's talk about punk rock in Montreal. And maybe this is an opportunity for you just to tell our listeners a little bit about what this story is about and some of the characters, because it's very character-driven. So
tell
us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, it's sort of, I guess, a coming-of-age, you know, mild Roman Clef type thing. And it involves five young people, I guess, from the ages of, you know, 10 probably to 20, something like that, spanning the glory years.
Yeah.
The horror years.
Right.
So anyways, but it's about that kind of time period and, you know, sort of the bands that were around there. In Montreal, it would have been, you know, the Nils, the Asexuals, bands that, you know, people may or may not be aware of. But it was at a time when that kind of music wasn't really popular. And to sort of be involved with it was to, you know, be much more marginalized and to kind of invite violence upon yourself and stuff like that. So it had a kind of a different, you know, and I think the kind of music now is great, but it just had a different kind of more lonely, suicidal sort of quality to it that I think is maybe probably for a good reason, not as so prevalent these days, but there is sort of a kind of weird hopelessness to it.
These kids are Anglo of Irish descent living on the other side of the tracks.
Yeah, NDG, I mean, for people NDG. Who know, NDG. For people
no
who
damn
know.
Good, as some people call it. That's where I lived for many years. Yeah. And they live on the other side of the tracks, and they're moderately educated. And of course, with the post-referendum era, which is the early 1980s in Quebec, the first referendum, the René Lévesque referendum, it was an awkward time to be young and Anglo and not particularly well-educated. And I think that you capture that fairly well in these cases. It just adds to their general sense of alienation. My guest is Matt Bissonnette. He's the author of Smash Your Head on the Punk Rock, and it is published by Exile Editions, and we're talking about the book. Then there's sex. There's a lot of sex.
Yeah.
And in particular, male sexuality, young male sexuality, which I found was very well depicted in the book, how the young male's mind goes from idly looking out the window to suddenly just winding up so fast.
You sure, yeah.
And then it's the way it thinks and the way it behaves and how it goes from concept to execution,
or failed execution for the most part. You know,
it seems like the energy of this book comes from that place.
I was very conscious of trying to write honestly about 15, 16, 17 year olds, but not write like one, if you know what I mean. Yeah, like, I wanted the style to be strong and assured and not like a, it's by no means a teen book, but I think, God forbid. No. But in a lot of, you know, books written, you know, from a sort of further back perspective, people tend to, for whatever reason, I find, not to articulate, you know, the kind of the intensity of the sex drive, you know, when you're a kid like that, and how much you're thinking about it and how immediate it is and all that and how much you're concerned with it. And I wanted to bring that right to the forefront, because, you know, I definitely remember my teenage years kind of like that, you know, and it being a very central part of my thinking. And I wanted to bring that home, you know.
Yeah, and I think that you did that very effectively. And
I mean, rock and roll. I mean, that is, you know, it's sex music, you know, and I think, you know, is that something I really wanted to key into?
One of the central characters in this book, Smash Your Head on the Punk Rock, is Father Tom. Tell us a little bit about Father Tom and the role that he plays in this book.
Well, again, you know, in writing the book, I wanted to sort of deal with some what I perceive to be archetypal teen themes. And, you know, one thing that I think comes up again and again, you know, is going to be sexual abuse or certain types of abuse with teenagers. And it's interesting because the topic has sort of become mundane. You know, it people don't really want to write about it. I think it seems cliched. It seems trite. And it's kind of fascinating to me that this thing that is happening over and over again and is incredibly damaging has somehow become not an interesting thing, you know, for narrative exploration or something. And I was kind of like, well, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I sort of wanted to find a way of, you know, addressing it. And in a way from the perspective of the events, you know, not making it the central part, but just sort of saying this is something, you know, that's going on in these kids' lives and sort of how it might affect them and address them like that. So that was sort of one of, you know, it was sort of a challenge to kind of bring it in. But, you know, and I think it's, again, not to get too off topic, but it's, again, like talking about music. You know, generally in books, I don't like that much music discussion in them because it seems you're kind of attaching kind of a, you know, coolness to the thing that maybe it doesn't merit or something like that. But, again, I wanted to not shy away from what I thought would be the concerns of these children, you know, of these kids. And I think that definitely would be one of them. And then, again, you know, I do think this kind of weird North American interest in teenage sexuality is totally prevalent. You know, not to talk about something that's been talked about too much. If you take someone like Britney Spears, who I know very little about, except I know that as a young girl, she was sort of dressed up as a younger girl.
Right.
People made millions and millions of dollars off her. The general public consumed that image, you know, with a voracious appetite. And now everyone's like going, why is she so messed up? And you're like, well, because there's this completely inappropriate interest in her sexualizing her at a very young age. And I think it's, and I don't think it's a marginal thing. It's prevalent in the culture. And I think it's bizarre that it's continually not discussed for various reasons. So I thought I'd just bring that out and put it right in people's faces and leave it at that, you know, and just say, you know, if you don't think it's done sensitively, or you think that it's like doesn't merit serious literature's treatment anymore because it's talk show fodder, then you know, I don't really care, but I'm going to bring it out there and lay it out. So
no, you handled it. Well, I wouldn't have expected it, especially with the rest of the book, for it to be handled any less directly than you handled it. But mm-hmm. you handled it directly, but also, again, a beautiful use of art.
Thank you very much.
You handled the scenes, in the way that you handled the way that the young man then deals with it in his mind. That was really, really well done.
Thank you.
So where you needed to, or where you might have said, you know, to use some discretion as far as how am I going to handle this particular mm-hmm. thing, you did. Just you took it to that line, but then that's where right to the beginning of our conversation, mm-hmm. we mentioned about the contrasting of energies or of styles.
Right,
or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
That was another great example of that. So, great. Congratulations, Matt.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right.